some nostalgia. Folks romanticize past positive experiences to a point that the memory of the event is much more positive than the initial experience. And folks also do the same with bad experiences, with the memory amplifying the experience in a negative way. We all do this to some respect. And some say that the negative experiences fade over time. And it's true that the conscious memory of negative experiences may fade. But let me tell you, trauma does not go away. Our entire systems remember trauma. Unaddressed trauma can significantly increase the risk of a wide variety of mental and physical health issues. It's one of the reasons that we're a congregation that's on a journey to become wise, welcoming, inclusive, supportive, and engaged for mental health. Too many people live with unaddressed trauma in their lives because of the stigma of getting mental health treatment. Too many people fall through the cracks because they either don't have access or just haven't sought out treatment. And too many times the church turns away from those in need because we're afraid, or we're unequipped, or we're just unwilling to help. And that's not okay. It's not okay at all. The church must continue to be a community of healing and hope. That is what we are. The church must continue to be a community of shared resources and shared kindness. That is what we are. The church must continue to be welcoming, inclusive, supportive, and engaged for mental health because that is what we are. Trauma does stay with us. And so do happy times. The happy times are the ones that we tend to romanticize. But when we try to recreate those romanticized times, the recreation really lives up to the romanticized version of the events, thereby kind of proving you can't go back home. In today's Bible reading, the prophet announces that God is going to do a new thing. But just before that announcement, there's this brief warning not to romanticize the events from the past and expect that this new thing is going to be just like the things from before. Yeah, romanticizing the past. See, the people of Israel who were living in exile when the prophet from Isaiah 43 spoke, they romanticized the past because listen to what the people of Israel had experienced. They were a people delivered out of bondage in Egypt. They were a people who walked through the sea while their would-be captors were drowned. People wandering in the wilderness for a generation, a people at Sinai getting the Ten Commandments, a people who finally made it to the Promised Land. Now a people who had been thrown out of their land, a people with a strong history but without a place to call home. And they looked back at the events that defined them and remembered what seemed to be the glory days. That's where we have to get back to. When we get all that back, we will be great again. And the prophet acknowledged the people's need to remember what God had done for them. But the prophet also said, heed this warning. Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. How does that work? If you're remembering the things of old and remembering that they're important, how can you just ignore history? Well, I don't think that the prophet was telling the people to ignore history. The prophet was warning that the people shouldn't dwell on the history or to romanticize it or expect that what comes next to be just like it was before in the glory days, or at least the way the people remembered it. God says, I'm about to do a new thing, making a way in the wilderness. And the wilderness is the unknown. The wilderness isn't the path that was you are on before. The wilderness is a scary place, but God says, I am making a way in that unknown place. This new thing, this way in the wilderness, is something different, a new way on a path that hasn't been traveled, and there's no comparison to the past possible. A way like this, and this is a little confusing. The wild animals will honor me, the jackals and the ostriches. For I give water in the wilderness, rivers in the desert to give drink to my chosen people. And jackals and ostriches? I have no idea what that has to do with giving drink to people in the wilderness. Maybe the animals are being compared to the people in exile. And maybe what is translated ostrich in our reading would be better translated as something called an eagle owl. Maybe it's a word of encouragement that God has a new way for all the people. And maybe it's God doing what God does with this new way, turning everything upside down. I don't know. I don't understand that sentence. I can't find anything that helps me really to understand that sentence. But God is providing a new way. God did provide a new way. God will keep showing a new way. And our question for us is, how are we experiencing God's new way? How do we experience God turning the world upside down? And the question that I asked with the children's sermon, how do we know when the new way is the brand new way and when the new way is something that we've visited before and been on but not exactly the same as it was? How do we figure that all out? Another question, what's a new way in your life? At the same time as we think about what's a new way in the life of our congregation. God says, I am about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. God calls us to be open to that, to remember the past, not to romanticize the past, to look forward to God's new way. Because unto new, untraveled paths, truly untraveled paths in the wilderness, God is making a way. Amen.